long list of herbs.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your free online holistic publication resource radio for trusting your intuition, achieving self-discovery, and following your soul self.
Well, good evening. This is Chief Cloud Piler. I'm here with Chief Wellamotkin. It is Namenhal Radio. Thank you, Chief Iggy Garcia, for helping us with this. I love his introduction.
We took a little break for the holiday.
For the holiday.
Halloween, yeah.
Holiday, yeah. We are. We actually commute into the office an hour and a half, and so we decided to be home for the holiday evening. So we're back, and we just had a little class with our apprentices here, our apothecary apprentices, and we got to talking about the lymphatic system. Well, and an apothecary is like...
They came in to learn the master herbology that we offer at the school.
Yeah, apothecary is like the... Apothecary to a naturopath or a physiopath is like the pharmacist to the medical doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're teaching, is the use of plants in internal and external medicine, in the natural ceremonial medicine that we use. And we got to talking about, you know, because you're reading the books, everybody has herbals. You know, everybody
can
get on the internet. You don't even have to own a book anymore. You never have to read a book again in your life because of the internet. So all of them are on the internet. You don't have to know anything. You can get on there and you can be all wise, all knowing, all powerful because of, you know, Lady Google.
And watch kitten videos.
Kitten videos. Yeah. And you can know everything because it's all there. And you don't have to have any expertise. You just read it. So I'm going to do that right now. One of the quintessentials in herbology now is Stephen Foster and James Duke's Medicinal Plants and Herbs. And I love this book. I use it all the time.
It's a really good book. Yeah.
But it's comprehensive. It's rather encyclopedic in the herbs that are found in North America and around the world. This is particular Eastern Central North America. But there is no way for anybody to get enough information on a given herb. But what I love about this, is that it gives you great photographs for identification in the field.
Right, yeah.
It gives you a description of the plant, where it grows, how it grows, what its mechanisms of action are in many cases, and what's used for. But one of the problems with herbal books and
blogs,
is that they give you an herb and they show you a picture of it and they tell you what it's good for. So, I mean, over and over and over again, we hear people come into the office and say, well, isn't such and such good for that? Well, today we were talking about the lymph. And in James Duke's book, the Eastern Central Medicinal Plants and Herbs, there's something like 20-some-odd different notations that are specifically for lymph, different herbs that are specifically for lymph. Or there are four other things, too, but... The notations in the index for lymph are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24 different herbs for the lymph that are good for the lymph.
Mm-hmm.
They're lymph cleansing, or they're lymph clearing, or they're lymph toning.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read one of them, and then let's talk about the lymph. Because what's given in the books gives us a mistaken impression of what the lymphatic system is. And much of the information in herbology is copied from other books.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Duke is great at what he does. The book is, like I said, one that I use extensively. But the information can be lacking.
So, well, how many herbs does he have in the book? There's a limited amount of space per entry.
It's really a lot, and you have half a page, and you just, you know, an herbalist needs more information than half a page on a handbook. And really, you get the same information in all the books that you buy. Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing. It may be worded a little bit differently, but they're all the books are copying from each other, yeah, because they're set up the same way. So let's use Smooth Sumac. Smooth Sumac is listed as one of the best. It's been used for a long time for lymph cleansing. So let me just read the notation that is given, the information that is given to all herbalists about Smooth Sumac. Now, this is Rus glabra, and it says it's a shrub. It can grow from 3 to 20 feet tall. The twigs and leaf stalks are smooth without hairs, leaves with 11 to 31 toothed leaflets. Fruits are red with short, oppressed hairs. It's active from June until October. It's found in fields and openings throughout our area. That would be the eastern and central mm-hmm. United States. Uses. American Indians use berries to stop bedwetting. Leaves are smoked for asthma. Leaf tea is used for asthma, diarrhea, stomatosis or mouth diseases, mm-hmm. dysentery. And the root tea is a emetic, diuretic, and a lymph cleanser. Okay.
It actually
so he uses the term scrofula, which is anything, any herb that is mentioned as an anti-scrofular is what they're talking about is cleansing the mm-hmm. lymphatic system. Okay. So the root tea is emetic. That means it makes you throw up
mm-hmm.
or gives you diarrhea.
One or the other.
Yeah. It's emetic. It clears you out. So mm-hmm. it's used for asthma, for diarrhea, for stomatosis, for dysentery. The root tea, however, is also emetic, so it makes you throw up or gives you diarrhea. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, so the bark tea was used for diarrhea, dysentery, fevers, scrofula, which is mm-hmm. cleansing lymphatic, general debility from sweating, also for mouth and throat ulcers, leucorrhea, and anal and uterine prolapse. It's astringent, it's tonic, it's antiseptic. Of 100 medicinal plants screened for antibiotic activity, this species was most active, attributed to content of gallic acid for methoxygallic acid and methylgallate. Alcohol extracts had the strongest activity. Warning, do not confuse this sumac with poison sumac, which has white fruits and toothless leaves and grows in or near swamps. Okay, so that's the information that you get. And so because it's a scrofular,
mm-hmm.
it is a scrubber of the lymphatics. All of the herbs, no, that's not what scrofulous or scrofular mean.
I wish I had my pharmacocracy book with me. I left it at home.
Right, but
I'd look up the term. We could read the term itself.
But what's interesting to me is, you can look it up on your phone while we do this. What's interesting to me is that every single one of the herbs listed in here in the index,
mm-hmm.
as you know, and the notation is for the lymphatic system, are also scrofular.
Mm-hmm.
They're for scrofula. So, you know, there's an associative meaning there. They're this and they're that. They're also all diuretic. All of them listed in Duke's book are diuretic.
Yeah, but the thing with scrofulous is, scrofulous herbs, is it doesn't actually cleanse the lymphatic systems. They're actually antimicrobial, antibacterials that were used in the treatment of tuberculosis.
Well, one of the problems with tuberculosis was that the organism itself plugged the lymphatic system.
Mm-hmm.
It caused scrofular lesions to form in the lymph nodes and stopped the lymphatics from flowing.
Yeah, and they could observe specific herbs having effect on the lymphatic system because the nodes that were swollen with tuberculosis and similar diseases would begin to shrink.
Right.
As they
would reduce
the
swelling of the lymph nodes and therefore the lymphatics mm-hmm. would begin to clear, and so the term scrofular came to mean
clearing
the lymph
system.
Clearing the lymph system, and so that has carried on to this day. So that cleansing the lymph system now in some of the less accurate books.
Uh-huh.
I appreciate Dr. Duke here
for using the original term,
the right original term. But what has been interpreted then and what has carried on is that because we don't have tuberculosis mm-hmm. so much anymore, people don't even know what that means. So they've switched it to meaning cleansing the lymphatics.
What it really means in pharmacognosy is that it is antibiotic that reaches the lymphatic system.
Right, right. It's not
most antibiotics don't reach the lymphatic system. Most of them are metabolized within the bloodstream or in muscle tissue.
Exactly.
In adipose tissue.
So they don't ever even reach the
right.
lymphatics. However, the other common denominator for all of these lymph notation herbs in the index
mm-hmm.
is diuretic.
I was going to ask you.
They're all diuretic. And so here's the question. Which of the mechanisms of action are we talking about here?
Mm-hmm.
Necessarily, you know, these herbs that are listed for good for the lymphatics,
mm-hmm.
Are they good for the lymphatics or are they just diuretics? And how does a diuretic clear the lymph system? So you just gave a really excellent explanation and description of lymphatics. This is the context of body work.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like you to kind of do a short, kind of a radio show version of what you just did in class. I know you're shooting from the hip, but it was really a good presentation. And
I had an audience.
And you had an audience.
It's so
now you can look at the screen and talk into the microphone. And do talk into the microphone so people can hear you.
Shut up.
Good idea. But give us a little bit of that, because that was excellent. And while I do that, I listen to you do that. I'm going to grab another notation here from the book. We'll talk about that. But you're brief on how does the lymphatic system function?
Well, first off, it doesn't have an organ pump of its own. It's one of the only systems in the body that doesn't have an organ that directly controls the system. So for a long time, historically, it wasn't considered a system of the body at all. The lymph vessels were considered part of the circulatory system. Before, historically, they isolated specific immune cells and specific liquids that were used and specific processes that were lymph system specific. And so when that paradigm shift came around, they had to take a closer look medically at the lymphatic system. And lo and behold, we discovered a pressurized hydraulic, primarily cholesterol-based waste removal mechanism without an organ driving it. There are organs that can directly affect it, but there isn't a specific organ that moves the lymphatic system.
But the lymphatic fluid does move.
But it does move. That's
how?
Right.
How? And my question then is how? Mm-hmm. Help us to understand how.
The mechanism is literally a valve, a gate, a one-way valve within the vessels on either side of the lymph nodes, all the way up from the furthest reaches of our appendages all the way to the heart. There are these valves, and they're one-way. The mechanism that pumps the lymphatic system is one of two things. It's physical movement. The vessels they lie really close or interlaced with our muscular structure. They're very closely tied to the muscles. And a lot of times you'll find lymphatic tissue, you'll find lymphatic vessels weaving their way. If you find some of these cross sections of muscle, big, heavy muscle, thick
right.
muscle tissue,
yeah, right.
you'll find lymphatic veins and vessels that have laced their way like roots through the fibers themselves of these muscles.
It's like the roots of mushrooms
uh-huh.
lacing their way through the roots of other plants.
Yeah, and some of these vessels are so small we can barely see them.
Right.
Some of the smallest that have been measured are merely 3 cells in diameter.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
small.
The wall is 3 cells lightly interlocking, and with a little gap of fluid in between them. That's how small they are. And so it's a pressurized hydraulic system, one-way valves, one-way gates, and the only thing that moves that liquid are one of two things, physical movement, and the other one is water.
Yeah, the contraction of the muscles
mm-hmm.
causes the valves to open and close, but they only, when they open, it is a relaxation. Mm-hmm. When they close, it is actually pushing upwards mm-hmm. towards the heart. So the you'll have a space between the valves that will actually be moving. They'll be mm-hmm. they'll be being squeezed by the muscle. And it squishes this oily, milky substance, mm-hmm. and it does it.
And when it pushes you take, right through that one-way valve.
But it can't come back the other
right.
direction. The
it's
valve
a
closes.
Gate.
Yeah, the valve closes. So you have an upward movement or a movement towards the heart. Mm-hmm. It's like a ram pump.
Yeah.
Totally like a ram pump. So that movement is one way. It can't go any other way. And people need to understand this thing, that it is the muscles that move mm-hmm. the lymphatics. Now, so how in the world do herbalists get off by saying that an herb is a lymph cleanser?
Because there is another thing that moves the lymphatic fluid. And that one is fluid from other parts of the body, and also heightened blood pressure. An increase in blood pressure will push more fluid into the lymphatic system and move the lymphatic fluids. But the trouble with influencing the lymphatic system with herbs is that, number one, they're all diuretic, and if we're dealing with a pressurized system, hydraulic system, the water is flushing out of the body because of the diuretic. Therefore, more water has to be allocated. And there are only a couple of channels through which more water can be allocated. One is through the bloodstream, and the other one is in the water reserves in the lymphatic system itself. We have a whole lot of water in the lymphatic system. It's actually sequestered in cholesterol. And from the adipose tissue that's holding water, you end up with a rush of liquids, all because of the diuretic.
Well, and here's the thing. In a closed system, if you were to take an IV bottle,
mm-hmm.
well, let's not use an IV bottle. Let's use a hydraulic system on a tractor. So, you know, I think better when I'm on the farm. In the old tractor I had, well, in any tractor that you have a pump, and mm-hmm. in this case, that would be the valves.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take and you have a storage tank, and when you need the front loader to raise up, mm-hmm. you push a lever that causes the pump to push hydraulic fluid into that cylinder, mm-hmm. and the cylinder pushes out. That's the pushing up of the lymph fluid upwards towards the heart. It pushes
yep.
out, and then when you pull off on that lever. The fluid in the cylinder runs back into the storage mm-hmm. tank. Okay, so in any hydraulic system, there is an equilibrium. There's an absolute equilibrium of fluids. So if you have a big storage tank and you draw some hydraulic fluid, it's coming from the mm-hmm. storage tank. If you draw the fluid or you push that fluid with a pump into the cylinder, you're moving fluid from the storage tank. Imagine that that is the storage tank is your lymphatic system. Mm-hmm. All the veins of your lymphatics is where the hydraulic fluid is being stored. So then you take a diuretic, which causes the kidneys to do what?
Flush.
It causes
the diuretics
kidneys.
Diuretics actually mildly irritate the kidneys, which causes a sudden influx of fluid into the kidneys as it works to repair itself.
That's right. It causes the kidneys to grab more water than is normal from the blood and
mm-hmm.
remove the excess water. The kidneys are important in that respect because if we didn't remove the water from
mm-hmm.
the blood, we would drown.
Yep.
So that's important. But the water the kidneys remove from the blood should go back into the tissues and into through the lymphatic system.
Mm-hmm.
However, diuretics cause a mild irritation of the kidneys, which requires water to resolve. But that water is not replaced. It floods. It flows out.
It's expelled.
Out. Yeah, it flows out
yeah.
in the urine, and so you pee out a whole bunch of your water. Well, if you take a hydraulic system and you, if I were to take and draw something to like push that, that's like the kidneys pushing hydraulic fluid into another system, into the cylinder
right.
that moves the front
yep.
loader. You're taking it out of the system. So when you draw fluid out of the system, it pulls fluid mm-hmm. on through that hydraulic system of the lymphatic. Remember, it's a one-way pull, and the kidneys are on the other end of the pull. So anything the kidneys draw off moves everything else in the system. Right. That is the only way that any of the herbs that are classified as lymph drainage or mm-hmm. lymph tonic or lymph cleanser, that is the only way they work. But the problem here is that is not a system in equilibrium, is it?
Nope.
Because you're losing the fluid. It's not going back in. The kidney's normally filtering the water-soluble everything from mm-hmm. the blood. When they do that, the kidneys send that water back into the closed system.
Mm-hmm.
And we remove a certain amount of waste in the wastewater that is used. But our system is made to top that back up.
Right.
We take fluids to top that back up. But you dump an herb and all the lymphatic toning, all the lymph drainage, and all the cleansing herbs for the lymphatics are diuretics.
Scrub, scrub, scrub.
Every single one of them is a diuretic. So you're doing absolutely nothing. Those herbs that are classified as lymph drainage
mm-hmm.
are wrongly classified. They are wrongly classified. They're not doing anything in the lymphatic system at all. The action is in the kidneys. And when you cause your kidneys, when you're doing a lymph cleanse, for example, mm-hmm. or a lymph drainage, you're actually doing damage to your kidneys that has to heal.
Mm-hmm.
So does it make any sense for natural healers who, you know, are supposed to have taken an oath to first do no harm? Does it make sense to hurt one system of the body in order to help another?
The lymphatic system is such a mechanical construct in the body that it requires a huge amount of fluid transfer, a huge amount of fluid allocation to move the lymph at all
right.
that way.
Right. That means
it is a thick, milky substance. It is not water. It's not serum.
And you can move the lymph by removing
yep.
water from the blood. But is it so wise? Is that really all that wise to remove that much water from the blood? In other words, for an herb to work, for mm-hmm. any of the lymphatic herbs to work in cleansing the lymphatic system or toning the lymphatic or draining the lymphatic mm-hmm. system, you have to move a huge amount of water.
Yeah.
And that water is taken from your tissues and from your bloodstream. Really, what we're saying is in order to satisfy good deal herbalists out there in herbal lymph drainage, you have to dehydrate your body. And that is going to dissatisfy so many other good deal herbalists out there who are telling
us, promoting water.
Yeah, we you know, we're a big bag of water and bones, mm-hmm. and we got to keep ourselves hydrated, which I believe.
Yeah, me too.
100%. Now, that's where the pop herbology comes in mm-hmm. conflict with itself. What is the natural, built-in, created method for toning, cleansing, and draining the lymphatics?
It's muscular movement.
So in layman's terms, translating that into anybody's terminology.
A walk.
Yeah, it means...
a rebounder, a mini tramp, Tai Chi.
What was it?
Stretching.
What was it that somebody said in the class? Get off your ass.
Yeah.
It's getting off of it. You know, pull your head out of your... Yeah, that. It's moderate exercise.
Mm-hmm.
That is how we're made. We are made for all of the muscles mm-hmm. of the body to move against the lymphatics in such a way, or the lymphatics to move within the muscles in such a way that your lymphatic system is naturally cleansed and toned and cleared, you know, drained every
yeah.
single day.
There's a logical, practical reason for why the lymphatic system doesn't have an organ of its own. It's not designed like the other systems of the body. It's designed for survival and daily operation. It is a waste delivery system, and its organ mechanism to move it is every single muscle interacting with it. No organ had to be developed. No organ had to evolve to move the lymphatic fluid.
Or we could more probably just as accurately say that the whole body evolved in order to move. Because it isn't just waste. We don't get any of the proteins and fats out to ourselves from the digestive system. Mm-mm. We do not get any of that nutrient out to our cells except through the lymphatic system.
Right.
The greatest number of lymph nodes in the body are found in and around the digestive tract. And that is so that the material that is now nutrient rich flows into, is taken up because of the siphoning action of the lymphatic, is taken up through the capillaries or near the capillaries into the lymphatic system from the digestive system. Mm-hmm. It then flows into the lymphatics, not so much into the bloodstream. Some does through the capillaries of the gut. However, from every single bit of that fluid in the lymphatics drains directly into the circulatory system up in the chest. So here we are. We've eaten. We've got all this nutrient, especially the proteins and fats, which really do not transmit into the fluids of the body via the capillaries around the gut. That is not how it works. Mm-hmm. The nutrient actually flows into the lymphatic system and from there into the circulatory system and from there it goes all through the body and into the interstitial fluids.
Yeah, we're even looking at different kinds of microorganisms in the lymphatic system versus the saline-rich environment of the serum. Organisms that are better suited to handle fatty, heavy, thick, fatty environments, heavy acid environments versus the relatively balanced environment of the blood and the serum.
Right.
Which is aqueous. It's a watery solution.
Very watery.
Saline solution. The lymphatic system is still, you're still dealing with digestion.
It's a fatty system.
It's another system whereby we obtain a lot of the fats that enter into our blood cells, into our muscle tissues. And
from which we create hormones and neurotransmitters and all kinds of stuff like that. Proteins and fats are transported through the body from the digestive system largely, I'm not saying 100%, but largely through the lymphatics.
Yeah.
And the lymphatics only move properly when we move our muscles.
Yep.
So it isn't the heart moving that nutrition into our cells. Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of is. It's in conjunction because it does end up in the circulatory system.
Yeah. And if the lymphatic system is not moving, the heart will compensate for its lack of movement by increasing the hydraulic pressure.
Blood pressure. Yeah, that's one of the reasons that blood pressure goes up, is to move the nutrient. It has to move the glucose, the oxygen, the nutrient. The heart is a big element here. But in order to really optimize and to have an equal system in balance, we need to move the lymph properly to enhance that system. And the only way to do that is to move the muscles. Now, question number three.
Oh, it's quiz time.
There are a lot of so-called systems out there that are designed to move the lymph, and I've watched. And I've laid on massage therapist tables.
I know which
where
one.
Where they literally pet the skin.
Mm-hmm.
And this is supposed to move the lymph. What I don't understand is, I just can't wrap my brain around thinking people who are supposed to know how the lymphatics work, believing that you can use a feather to pet the skin and move the lymph when it is literally designed to be moved by muscular contraction. Mm-hmm. Muscular contraction is a dang lot of work.
Yes, it is.
It's a dang lot of work.
It's not petting.
No,
it's not petting.
Scraping the skin with a feather or with a bone or with a stick, if it's not moving the muscle, it's not moving very much lymph at all. And so what I have to believe
there is a superficial lymph in the epidermis.
Well, of course.
In the dermis. And that's really what they're working with. But once it gets into the deeper lymphatic vessels, then what?
It doesn't go unless
that lymphatic, if those are not moving, that liquid's not going anywhere.
Yeah, so we get to the ancient brushing methods. That was for the health of the skin.
Correct. Yeah.
Not draining the lymphatics. And so they've, here again, pop healers, pop herbalists have decided that since anciently a feather or a bone or a stick or something like that could be used to move and cleanse the skin to keep the lymphatics of the skin working, why that can be applied to every other part of the body.
And it's honestly very effective for proper skin care.
Well, it is. Brushing has been known, been used for a long, long time. But to apply that automatically to the greater lymphatic system that is woven into, through, around, about, and in the muscular system, the muscles of the body, is just reductionism. Again and again, we run into this reductionist theory that obliterates, it obliterates anything we might have learned about anatomy, physiology, because the books are full of it, and where there's so much smoke, how could there not be any fire? It has to be true because everybody says it.
Right.
It's a Trumpism. It's true because I say so. I've told you this over and over and over, and so you know that it's true because I've told it to you.
We're not supposed to get political.
Oh, yeah, well, we are.
Yeah, whatever.
We are, too, supposed to get political every day of our life. But it's this is symptomatic of a reductionist way of thinking about herbs.
Yeah.
And I use this example. I use this question tonight as an example. We could use any of the points of the medicine wheel. We can use any of the mechanisms of action written in these books, and we will watch people use the internet especially.
Yeah.
And with reductionist thinking, boil things down until they're meaningless. And they do things that have no effect. No effect whatsoever, or so little effect, or if the effect that they have, let's say, for example, skin brushing. The effect on the skin is fantastic.
It is.
It's huge.
Absolutely.
But the effect on draining the lymphatics, generally, not so much.
Just to try it, to make sure that my understanding of the method, the skin brushing for lymphatic drainage, just to see if I was off, I have worked on people with lymphedema and edema. Those, and I used a brushing technique to see what kind of effect we're talking about. We're talking about a minor stimulation of a deep tissue affliction. That person would have had to come to me twice a week for an hour for weeks and weeks to get a benefit from brushing.
A benefit, and that's not even the benefit she needed to get.
No. Now, she needed the lymphatic vessels to open. She needed those valves open. She needed the vessels drained so that the body could get fresh fluid into the system and get it pumping right.
Right. So natural healers are supposed to be enhancing the body's intrinsic ability to heal itself. So if the body, being designed properly by nature or by whatever you decide, some people will say creation, some people will say God, some people will say nature, some people will say biology.
I say yes.
Yeah, and I say, huh, which, nods to all of them. But being properly designed through what I call creation, there is a natural method. So when we look at the design or the pattern language of nature, we can develop ways of enhancing that, but usually it's by, in a sense, mimicking nature.
Yeah.
When I go out in the field, when I go out in the forest, and I look at principles of succession, for example, mm-hmm. I'll look at a big oak tree that's grown there for 80 years,
right,
and I will note that out at the drip line there is a berm that's been created by leaf fall over 80 years. It has created a landscape that is a hollow out to the drip line. It's higher ground that creates a kind of a lens that moves mm-hmm. back towards the roots. Now, this serves the tree because it directs the water that's coming off of the leaves off mm-hmm. of the tree back towards the roots. But also is, you know, it's successive. It creates a huge amount of soil so that when you get out there to the drip line, smaller trees and bushes grow out there. You have mm-hmm. a succession. You look at pattern. So then I go out into my orchard and I say, you know what? I can take the same space that apple tree is occupying, and I can plant berries around the drip mm-hmm. line because the apple tree will do the same thing as that big oak.
Right. Yeah.
I take a natural process and I enhance the earth's or the garden's mm-hmm. natural or intrinsic ability to make more soil. That's what natural healers are supposed to be doing with the body, enhancing the body's intrinsic ability to heal. So we look at how the lymphatic system in general is made. We actually do see a venous system that is full of tiny one-way valves that can
yep.
only function by being moved upon either by the movement of the hydraulic itself,
mm-hmm.
vast amounts of water movement
right.
out
that,
of the system.
Because that will work at a cost, but it will work.
At a big cost,
yeah.
but it will work. Or a healer can take their hands
mm-hmm.
and they can push on a muscle.
Yep.
Isn't that true?
Yeah.
I mean, with the lymphedema, and I don't know if people out there know what lymphedema is, but it's bad news. You have your regular edema where, let's take a diabetic, and you've probably mm-hmm. seen this a million times, their ankles and their feet will swell up
yeah,
and they'll start to
yeah.
ooze fluid. That's edema.
This standard edema is an aqueous edema.
It is.
A swelling of water in the capillaries and into the adipose. The vessels burst and it stays. The water just stays in the capillaries.
Usually that's because of a problem with the heart being able to push
mm-hmm.
enough fluid through the kidneys to take out the extra water.
Right, yeah.
That's congestive heart failure. It happens in diabetes mm-hmm. quite often. You know what? Lymphedema is a different kind of edema.
It's not the same.
So lymphedema has more to do with the fats and the fluids.
And the mechanics of the lymphatic system. In this case, certain portions of the lymphatic system in this lady had been surgically removed following an operation to remove cancer.
Right.
And so mechanically, she had fewer gateways for the lymphatic system. Her body was having to reroute the lymphatic flow, and the result was lymphedema.
So the building up of lymph
in
the
in
lymphatic
the
system,
right.
a backup, you mm-hmm. don't have enough of the valves, they've taken out some of the system. Okay, so the only way to help that is not with brushing,
mm-mm.
it would be with increased muscular activity.
Yep.
You just have to increase the speed of the clearance.
Yeah, well, and for one thing, the longer the lymph sits, the more putrid it becomes.
And the thicker.
It becomes
yep.
thicker, and then eventually you end up with infections, like the swollen lymph nodes. It is also where our body sequesters various pathogenic materials and organisms.
Well, there's a reason for that, too, because within all of this, you have nodes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the nodes are not part of the gateway system.
Not really,
The
no.
nodes are backwaters. They're back pressure systems.
Mm-hmm.
They're pools.
And quarantines.
Well, that's what I'm talking
yeah.
about. The body naturally quarantines foreign material because the body knows intrinsically that the lymph is also filled with immune cells.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the ways in which the motile immune cells move through the body. So as these cells are moving through the body, they are exposed to toxic materials, pathogenic
mm-hmm.
materials, infectious materials because it is the motile immune cells that go out and tell the rest of the immune system cells
what's going on.
What to do when those things leave the nodes and try to eat the rest of the body. Uh-huh. But if those are not regularly moving and clearing and cleansing by muscular action, they become putrid. They mm-hmm. ferment and they infect and they swell, and it can be pretty bad stuff. So lymphedema is, you know, requires an increase in physical activity. Mm-hmm. That's one of the only treatments for it, is an increase in physical activity.
And that's what we did, and it was very effective.
As opposed to brushing, which was not very effective at all.
No.
In fact, not effective at all.
It was, it wasn't.
Not effective. And what's interesting is I have never, you know, I had to learn about lymphedema because of the pathology part of my training, the anatomy physiology, but I've never watched for it. And I've been watching a show out of Canada where these two guys they both have design shops. They both buy and sell old crap, garbage that people store or throw away, and they bring it out. And it's really popular to use this in interior and exterior designs. I mean, the hipster movement and the steampunk movement, I mean, it's really not uncommon to walk in people's homes and see
a custom designed, interior designed vintage item of
vintage,
some kind.
Vintage items. Yeah, I guess that was the word I was talking about.
Yeah.
But anyway, they have this reality show. It's on Netflix, and I love watching it because they'll go into somebody's barn, and the owner will say, I got this crap. I got to downsize. I got to get rid of some of this stuff. I don't leave it to my children. And they'll go in, and they'll find absolute treasures. Well, in watching this show, I don't know what it is about Canada, or maybe it's just reality shows.
They just have better music.
Over and over and over again, they show owners. It's the owners of the properties.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen so much lymphedema in the older people, because most of these people are calling on these guys are older.
Yeah.
And I've seen so much lymphedema. And what's interesting is that where they're doing their digging, their treasure hunting, is in what's called cottage country up in St. Edward Island in Canada. And most of these people are retired folk.
Mm-hmm.
And because their physical activity has changed or reduced, they get these huge lymphedemas, and it's just, you know, they're in cottage country, so they're vacationing, they're in tank tops and they're in t-shirts and it's visible, whereas you watch a show about something like this dumpster diving in the city, you're not going to see that because it's cold and they're wearing their regular clothes. But it struck me watching this show that all of these examples over and over and over again, for the first time in my career, I've actually had, you know, a lot of lymphedema to look at, and they're all middle-aged to elderly.
Yeah.
And the common denominator there is, again, the natural pattern of the body.
Lack of activity.
The lack or the change. They may be quite active for their age, but the change in activity has changed their body's ability to move their lymphatics. And lymphedema is the result.
One of my supplicants not too long ago got kind of upset after having spent hundreds of dollars going to a massage therapist for lymph drainage, and it was lymph brushing, and got better benefit after she followed my instructions to get a mini trampoline.
Yeah.
And she had felt benefit from the constant work with the therapist, the massage therapist, but it had been a long, grueling month, week after week, several months of repeated sessions to get, you know, a nominally noticeable effect from the lymph drainage. After a week of bouncing on a mini trampoline, just enough for her heels to come up off the trampoline. That's all we're talking about. It made 2 inches. Her heels, not her toes. Her toes stayed fixed to the trampoline. And it's a mini trampoline. After a week of that, she noticed a drastic increase in energy and a reduction in the lymphedema swelling.
Yeah.
And she was upset because she paid $120 for her mini trampoline and hundreds of dollars on a massage therapist.
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars on
brushing.
Brushing. Lymph went
massage and brushing.
You know, 20 years ago, or in excess of 20 years ago, when I had to get certified in body work in order to get the doctorate in natural medicine, I had to learn lymph drainage massage.
Yeah.
And I remember 20 years ago, better than 20 years ago, let's see. Yeah, 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
It started the studies was, much earlier, but the group, you know.
Yeah, I was finished. Eight.
Yeah, when I finished eight, and got the degree.
Yeah.
By the time I got certified in various types of massage, one of them being lymph drainage, I remember, and I have used it to this day, that lymph drainage massage is one of the least pleasurable kinds of body work around.
That's the one you told me.
And every single person that has ever had, you know, that I've ever done lymph drainage while I'm doing the massage on them, they're calling me names.
I might be a little nicer than you on that.
And then afterwards, they, oh, it feels wonderful. But while you're doing it, they're, you know, because you are actually vigorously getting in there and moving the muscles. And the some of the popular massage today is so light touched that I'm not sure what's going on. It's more like foreplay than it is therapeutic. I mean, it just seems like that. It's like petting.
Yeah.
It's not therapeutic. It's not what I was taught.
Mm-mm.
It's not what I learned was therapeutic massage. Even traditional classic Swedish massage is much, much more than some of the stuff I'm seeing today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little disturbing. We had an opportunity to walk around for a day with a lady here and who actually was principal in writing the Missouri State Massage License.
Oh yeah,
legislation.
Yeah, the Massage Therapy License Act.
Act. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in my review of much of, well, the only review I have of massage that came out of her school, it's since been closed. It was forced to be closed. But the review I have of the massage that came out of her school is that that a lot of the therapists that graduated were taught the popular idea that massage is really just kind of light touch movement over the skin, or the massage can even be accomplished without touching the skin at all. Now, it's I call that something else.
There's not even massage.
Yeah, that's energy work. But there's so much energy healing that has now been, you know, squished into massage. It's like it's like a very strange hamburger now. You know, when you make sausage, when you go out and hunt, you make sausage. You've got your game meat, and that would be old style massage.
Uh-huh.
And it's a little too tough. It's a little too stiff, and so what they do is they
now take, we have hamburger.
Yeah, they take lamb fat or beef fat or pork fat and other meats, and they mix it in, and they grind it all together, and they squish it all together, and it comes out a sausage that can actually be cooked because it's not too tough. Well, that's kind of, I think, that's an analogy in my mind of today's modern massage therapy.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's just been mushied down. Mm-hmm. To where the therapeutic effect is more, you know, massage is back to where it's for relaxation again.
Yeah, as opposed to its therapeutic approach, you know, 50, 60 years ago. It was older than that. It's when it was really therapeutic.
Back in the old days, when you went to a masseuse after you worked out.
Yeah. And there are still some disciplines, but they're getting harder and harder to actually get your meat hooks into, like traditional Swedish.
Oh yeah,
traditional Swiss massage. That's still really deep tissue. Then there are specialty classes for deep tissue massage.
Right.
And they've got subcategories in massage, and
But the vast
then there's
majority.
Thai massage, but the vast majority is the
very light touch.
Very light touch. Yep. Precision neuromuscular, you know, you're working on a very specific little thing in a very specific area, as opposed to, you know, actually working with the whole system that's afflicted with the problem in the first place.
That's right. You know, here again, it's reductionism. Mm-hmm. We've gotten down to working on a muscle bundle. And we work it and we work mm-hmm. it and we work it and we relax it and we relax it and we relax it and we get, you know, that's where your pain is. So we need mm-hmm. to work there, and we work there and spend 40 minutes there. And by the time you're done, that muscle, you bet, is relaxed.
Yeah.
The rest of you is as hard as a board.
And I've seen people do that with trigger points.
Trigger point, yeah.
Like the original theory behind trigger points is that, yes, you work on the trigger point itself, but only so long as you're also addressing the muscle to which the trigger point is attached.
Right.
You work not just on the trigger point, which is what a lot of therapists I've seen do, is just massage the
hammer
trigger
point. Hammer the
point.
Yeah. Hammer
the
point.
Idea is to use the trigger point to identify which muscle or which muscle group has been afflicted and address the health of the muscle.
Because
the
trigger point is called a trigger point or pressure point uh-huh. because it causes a reaction in a whole group so that you know what group
right.
or what area to work on. But again, that even in and of itself is reductionism. The muscular system is a balanced system.
Mm-hmm. Levers and pulleys and rubber bands. Lots and lots of them.
Levers and pulleys and rubber bands. So to relax, I remember way back in junior high school, this is going way back. Way back in junior high school, my PE teacher was named Mr. Bruises, of all things. And we thought that was really funny. You know, we had two PE teachers in Evergreen Middle School in Everett, Washington. One was Mr. Bruises, who was, you know, he was the football coach.
Uh-huh.
And the other was Mr. Clark, who played tennis. Now, Mr. Bruises was a collegiate athlete, but he wasn't like Olympic.
Oh, okay.
But what happened to him was he was a javelin thrower, and he worked his muscles so that
in a specific way,
so that he could throw the javelin mm-hmm. farther and farther and farther. And what ended up happening was he worked up the triceps
mm-hmm.
so much. He concentrated on one muscle group so much at the detriment of every other so that he could throw the javelin.
Mm-hmm.
It was all about throw. So his right triceps was huge.
Yeah.
He showed us pictures of it when he was in high school, and he was a record breaker for, not in high school, but in college. For his college, the little college he went to, he was a record breaker, and he could flat throw that thing. You know, it was a missile. But in his senior year in college, he went out on a tournament, and he was particularly up against another really great athlete. And he described how, because he built the one muscle, concentrated so much on the one muscle, when he threw the javelin, as he released the javelin and his arm straightened out, because you've got the javelin and your arm is bent,
yeah.
and then you just, like a rubber band giving uh-huh. way, you just throw that thing out there. Well, your arm has to stop at the elbow. When mm-hmm. your arm is fully extended, it has to stop. Well, he had built the tricep up and a couple of the other muscles so much so that he could get the distance in the throw that when he released it with so much power, the elbow just kept on going because there was no balance on the back of his arm. He had not built
triceps
the rest
the
of
back,
the arm.
Biceps
on the front.
Yeah.
There was no balance. It was half the arm and not the other. And
I'm just imagining this.
You know, it just continued on, and the elbow broke,
uh-huh.
and it ruined his athletic career because it just blew out the elbow by throwing the javelin. There again is an analog of reductionism. His goal was to work just the muscle groups that were important to his particular function.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I see massage therapists doing today.
A lot of them.
They
yeah.
will focus on one thing where it's, You know, our body is a balanced system. It's the whole body.
Levers and pulleys and rubber bands.
Yeah, so if you've got a sore neck, you were working on my neck today.
Yeah.
And in working on my neck, you discovered that the problem was not in my neck at all.
No.
It was lower down in my back. Healers have to be mindful that we are not a reductionist system. We are an inclusionist system where levers and pulleys and rubber bands, you know.
And bacteria and virus and sludge.
We're all these things. And so in, you know, when we apply that to lymphatics, again, we have this reductionist idea that because you can use a certain herb that reduces swelling in a lymph node, it's going to drain the lymph system.
Never mind, you know, getting into why it's a scrofulous herb.
Yeah, that it is causing your kidneys to dramatically change the fluid content of your body, having huge effects on the rest of the body. No, you're focused on that lymph node.
And that it's actually an herbal antibiotic that is treating, that survives into the lymph system, that is treating the infection that's in the node.
Yeah, that
it has nothing to do with lymphatic drainage.
Well, I'm talking about all the rest of the herbs
that
are diuretic that are now lymph drainage. You know, not, it's reductionism.
Yeah.
And here again, we're up against a fad, a pop healing that is, you know, much of the rest of the science in the world today is getting past reductionism.
Right.
Is getting back into collectivism, into intermind, into the idea that we are connected beings, that we're not isolated. And yet natural healing of all things is finding itself finally getting into reductionism, like the, you know, like the bastard stepchild of allopathy that it is. Allopathy is winding down and natural medicine is finally catching up to winding down allopathy. Mm-hmm. We've got to step up our game. We have got to get back to pattern language. We've got to walk back into the forest, and I'm using that metaphorically, and look at natural systems again and understand that healers are only there to try to assist natural systems, not replace them.
We need to study the body this way.
Yeah, we go into the forest when we're thinking of When we permaculturists, for example, are thinking of planting an orchard, we don't take 150 apple trees, like the Department of Agriculture says, and plant them 20 feet apart in rows so that your tractor can get through. It's not for the tractor.
No.
Okay, so the body is not put together for the convenience of the therapist.
Last week, my kids had a round of stomach flu, and a friend of my wife's mentioned that we should be giving them olive leaf extract to wipe out the flu. And olive leaf extract is one of the most one of those all over the place published. It's in all the books. You know, it is the antibiotic. It's the antimicrobial. It'll totally wipe out the stomach flu.
It's a fad.
And it is a fad.
It's completely a fad.
So then I brought up that fact that it's a fad. And so they jumped into another one. Well, they should take a little bit of tea tree oil.
Oh, yeah, tea tree oil kills everything.
And we know that kills everything. That's guaranteed. It absolutely kills everything.
It's freaking Lysol, okay?
Uh-huh. Instead, with discernment, with reason, with an understanding of the body, the remedy that works with minimal impact, minimal detriment to the body, is food.
The right food, yeah.
It's the stuff that I made for them was essentially food. It was in honey and juice with lots of pectin and a few select herbs that I know have a direct impact on viruses, and this was a viral stomach flu, and a few carminatives to reduce the gas and to help with the discomfort.
And a bulker. A bulking.
Exactly.
Pectin to bulk.
The pectin to bulk. The pectin to apply the medicine right where it needed to be, which is on the intestinal lining.
Right. Not just flushing through with the diarrhea.
That's right. that is what an apothecary does.
Right.
It's not just to take some tea tree oil, put it in a pill and swallow it, or drop a couple of drops of tea tree oil in your water and swallow it, or take these herbs that are known to beat the stomach flu and just drink it down. Because your body in stomach flu with diarrhea, it's coming out as fast as it's going in.
Oh, yeah. The whole idea and the thing to remember, of course, is that, you know, by the time you have any symptom at all, with influenza, yeah. You are well into the, oh my gosh, you are well into the infection.
At that point, you're not really working to kill the organism. You're working to interfere with its next generation.
Right, right. Because all of the symptoms of flu are the flu's process of getting out of
that's
your body
right.
so that
yeah.
it can kill people. That's what the symptoms are. By the time you've feel a symptom of the flu, it's already done its job.
Yeah.
It's already replicated using your RNA. It's all or DNA. It's already fleeing the body, and you have to have diarrhea or puking or bleeding
for it to transmit
or coughing to get out of the body and pass on to the next generation. I'm looking up influenza.
Ah, oh, there we go.
Influenza, because invariably somebody say, oh, you know, you have the flu. I'll look in my index because my
for
index
influenza,
tells me
that's
everything.
Right.
So let's just grab one, okay?
Okay.
Page 89. This is what the friend of your wife did. Page 89. Oh, you need to use Bone Set. What your children really need is Thoroughwort. Bone Set. Yeah, because, you know, it says right here in its uses, the leaves were used to treat breakbone fever, which is dengue fever, characterized by severe aching down to the bones. You get aches when you have the flu, and so you need to take this herb. That's reductionism.
What?
Well, it's reductionism, right? This is how the name Bone Set originated, a common home remedy of 19th century America, extensively employed by American Indians and early settlers, wildly used reportedly with success during flu epidemics in 19th and early 20th century. Now,
anti-inflammatory.
They don't go on to find out why it works. I love James Duke.
Mm-hmm.
David Duke's another Duke.
Yeah.
James Duke, because he does tell us a little bit of how it happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, its mechanism of action.
So makes books like this useful versus other books that don't.
Yeah, yeah. So it's weakly anti-inflammatory.
Yep.
And it's laxative. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's really diaphoretic.
Mm-hmm.
It reduces the fever. It takes one of the symptoms that is causing the pain
right.
and the suffering
yeah.
and mitigates that. But you see...
But that wouldn't do anything to the flu, the virus itself.
Right, you would take that to break the breakbone fever.
Yeah.
But because it was widely used for flu, it wasn't really used for flu. It was used
for fever.
It was used for fever. And so now it's one that's listed in the index for influenza. And the first thing that your friend of the family would read is, this is used for flu.
Yeah.
It's always been used for flu. So give your kids Bone Set, whether they're actually having the fever or not.
Right.
I mean, give them because it's going to help their diarrhea. Well, no, it isn't.
No, not really.
It's not going to do one thing. It's not going to do diddly squat for their diarrhea. In fact, with the diarrhea, it probably won't do anything for the fever because now you're flushing so fast that it wouldn't even get into the body.
Right.
You're going to just poop it out.
Yeah.
It's diabucus of the blowhole, and that's where all your medicine goes. That's the problem with reductionism, and that's the problem, I think, largely with the Internet. The Internet has given us huge amounts of information, but the problem is we have not been taught in our culture to take information other than in a soundbite method.
Yeah.
So you get on the Internet with this huge amount of information, and you have a soundbite educative philosophy, you're just going to spew soundbites.
Right.
That's reductionism. Our educational system is a reductionist system. So how do we overcome this? Science worldwide, a lot of scientific disciplines are now, right to quantum physics, are now saying we have to begin to accept the idea that we are not single beings. We have to begin to accept the idea and understand that we are a walking colony of myriads of organisms all working together in balance. You can't take, or you can try to take one part of the body and parse it out and treat that one part of the body. But again, we run into problems. Let's use a couple of our, well, it happens over and over again.
Yeah.
I just printed out a long printout of 123 pages of drug interactions because one of our supplicants has a doctor who just feels that she is too old to be important or worth his time.
Yeah.
And so, well, for example, his diagnosis of neuropathy came from, I mean, you were telling me about this.
That was ridiculous.
Where did she has neuropathy, so she's taking anti-epileptic drugs.
Her massage therapist told her that she had neuropathy, and she relayed that information to her doctor, who wrote it on the sheet.
So her doctor, taking the massage therapist diagnosis, prescribes for her anti-epileptics. Okay, this is the kind of thing that just irritates the daylights out of me. But here's, again, another example. Same lady. She had a stroke. Okay, she had a clot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so in order to keep her from ever having a clot again, they put her on statin drugs.
Mm-hmm.
In the package insert for statins, all the statins, they tell you, do not. They tell you it's commonly done, but really don't do this. Don't combine this with a loop diuretic. But invariably, every single time we find that they're giving statin drugs.
It's with a loop diuretic.
And a loop diuretic.
Gosh.
And almost patently, you're going to find that they're taking Prilosec as well, which is a
proton pump inhibitor.
So what are they actually treating here when you boil it right down? The statin drugs are for high blood pressure, but is it actually treating the high blood pressure?
Mm.
I mean, the high blood pressure is not a disease. It's a symptom.
No, it's a symptom.
But the statin drugs are getting at a level of metabolism.
Right.
They're blocking calcium metabolism. Okay.
Oh, that's the word I was looking for. Calcium channel blocker.
So the calcium channel blocker disturbs the body's ability to utilize magnesium and potassium, specifically potassium. So then what they also give, however, with these is a loop diuretic, which really robs the body of potassium. So then you've got to have a potassium supplement, and the potassium supplement is not properly used, so you have to have another drug. Reductionist thinking, going after one thing, parsing out one thing in the body, causes a side effect, which then has to be treated, which causes a side effect, which has to be treated. So if the drugs don't think of our body, in a reductionist way, why do we medically treat our bodies in a reductionist way?
Yeah.
The difference between a certified natural healthcare
professional
and an apothecary is that the apothecary is being trained to go back and look at natural systems as their model, as the pattern language that we use to not only discern what is happening in the body for good or for ill, but also for developing protocol to enhance the body's intrinsic ability, the ability that's already there.
What is the liver doing to... I mean, what does the liver naturally do to address this? Well, as an apothecary, what can we do to enhance the liver's ability to do something it's already supposed to do?
Right, and while we're doing it, how is that natural function affected by other functions in association? And what are we doing when we work to enhance the liver alone? When we work to enhance the entire system in all of its associations... Mm-hmm. Then we don't have the kind of side effects.
Right.
Or we can even mitigate drug side effects by looking at the body's natural intrinsic ability.
Yeah. How many times have we addressed an infection, a bladder infection or a kidney infection over the years by taking a very small dose of what we would consider a kidney cleansing herb and conjoining it with a powerful immune modulator.
Right.
Versus using an herbal antibiotic or an herbal antiviral.
It works.
I mean, how many times have we done that?
We've
I mean,
done
that's
that
a
over,
lot.
We've done that over and over and over again because that is the...
Something that mildly agitated the organ, but a lot of times you don't even have to do that. The infection alone is enough.
Draw the attention
to draw the attention to the immune system.
Modulate up the immune system and draw the attention.
Then your herbal antibiotics, your herbal antivirals can be kept in the background for an emergency situation
when
the body is simply overwhelmed.
Yeah, because look at the overuse of antibiotic drugs mm-hmm. has brought about the specter, the very real possibility that sometime between 2035 and 2050, 60% of medicine as we know it may not be practicable.
Right.
I mean, you take antibiotics out of the mix, and there are, you know, most of
it's
medical surgery.
All surgery. I was going to say surgery.
Most of
one.
Medical procedure cannot even be practiced mm-hmm. without it now. So that kind of profligate use of antibiotic mm-hmm. drugs has brought about. The possible collapse of medicine as we know it today. They're going to have to morph into something else in order to even be around 50 years from now. So the profligate use of herbal antibiotics will do what? Well, that won't be a problem with herbs because you can take all the herbs you want to. Herbs can't hurt you.
Okay.
Herbs are...
I don't know how many times I have heard that and I end up staring and blinking.
Yeah, there's
blink.
You know,
I don't have a response for it. It's so ludicrous.
It's
every time I hear it that
it's ridiculous. I am brought back to one of the first experiences I had as a new naturopath. I'm teaching a class, and there's about 40 people in the mm-hmm. class. Well, maybe it was one of my smaller. Maybe it wasn't 40, but never mind. Right in the front row was a lady, and she was wrapped up like a mummy. And I could see her eyes and a little bit of her face, but that's about it. Mm-hmm. She was sitting right in the front row, and it was so distracting to me. So distracting that I finally stopped. And I said, do you mind if I ask you, what is your malfunction? What is your malady? Why are you wrapped up like a mummy?
You're so nice.
Why are you wrapped up like a mummy? And she told me, well, I'm a housekeeper,
mm-hmm.
and I clean bathrooms, and I got some yeasty problems on my hands.
Pretty common in that occupation.
Yeah, that occupation. Yeah. You're candida.
Yep.
It's not even necessarily that there's so much infection,
mm-mm.
so much candida. It's because you're using anti-infectives all the mm-hmm. time.
You wipe out your own flora.
On your hands, your own flora is not there to keep Candida albicans in check. And so she got a candida, and it was candida outbreak, but it was all over her body. I said, oh, wait a minute. Okay. You don't get candida albicans all over your body by washing toilets.
Nope, not usually. Hands.
It's the hands and maybe up the elbows,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you touch your face.
Yeah.
Something like that. But she had it all over her body, and she said, well, that's not really when that happened. That's not I have a friend who's a Young Living oils distributor, and when I got candida albicans, she gave me some tea tree oil. And she said, just wash your hands, put some of this on your hands, and it'll make it all go away. And it didn't. It started getting worse,
uh-huh.
and she said, well, what you really need to do, because this is all over your body and in your body, it's systemic, it's everywhere. Yeast is everywhere. Everybody has yeast. Everybody's infested with this yeasty parasite. Put it in your bath water and soak in it.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, so I did. My friend was this distributor. She'd been with Young Living Oils forever, and she really knew her stuff about the oils. And so I did. I started putting it in my bath water, and then it went everywhere. And I asked her for the benefit of the class to unwrap her head and her neck. And she was one huge open pustule.
Oh.
It was purulent. It was just a pussy open candida albicans horror.
And it was like that all over her body because of reductionist thinking. Mm-hmm. She
Kill the candida.
The profligate use of an antimicrobial. Well, tea tree oil is a...
It's one of the oldest antimicrobials.
It's essential oil of eucalyptus.
Yeah.
A type of eucalyptus of trees. Mm-hmm. It's one of the oldest, you know... It's been around for a long, long time. I mean, Melaleuca is one of the first multi-levels in the country, right? And Melaleuca is tea tree oil.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, what has happened is that your one plant oil, which is supposed to not be harmful because it's herb, which can't hurt you, and people are drinking this horrible stuff.
I shudder.
Literally, has wiped out all the microbes that it can, and the one that is strongest, strong enough to come back is Candida albicans. And
it, highly aggressive in its natural environment.
And Candida adapts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could grow Candida in a dilute serum of Melaleuca.
Yeah.
A dilute solution of Melaleuca. So what I had her do was go out into, stop using Melaleuca for one, or the tea tree oil.
The tea tree oil.
It was Young Living, so it wasn't Melaleuca.
Mm-hmm.
That's a patented name, trademark name. But she went, she stopped using that.
And they make some nice hair products.
Well, yeah, they're not a bad company, but she stopped using that in her bath. Instead, I had her take a sock, go out and get some dirt out of her backyard. Just dirt.
Yep.
Put it in the sock, tie it, and float that in her bath. And she did that. 3 months later, she came back to me, and she had a little bit around her earlobes left.
You literally told her to use a mud pie.
Dirt. Soak in dirt. So there's the opposite view.
Mm.
The view of the Young Living oil was kill the organism.
Right.
The apothecary... the mindful and thinking herbalist,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the mindlessness that is out there, or the McMindfulness that is out there. The opposite is to take all of the organisms that are extant in the soil and put them back onto the skin so that a balance, an equilibrium could be reached. Because what had happened was it was literally the antimicrobial cleaning fluids that had caused her to get the infection in the first place. So then following it up with an antimicrobial does not make any sense. And so that's why I use the analogy of the profligate use of antibiotic drugs and the profligate use of antibiotic herbs. It's exactly the same premise as what happened with the sweet lady that then came to me 3 months later and showed me how dirt alone was the medicine that tea tree oil could never be. And it was balance. It was looking at the pattern language of the natural creation of the body. How many different organisms do we have living on the surface of our skin? How many are there? Well, who knows? There's hundreds, even thousands of different kinds of organisms on this colony we call human beings.
Well, and inside us, we have over 1,000 species groups.
Right.
In the microorganisms on our skin, where we're in contact with so much in our daily life, who knows how many?
It's huge. It's absolutely huge. To take a sample of skin, look at it under the microscope, it is an amazing thing to look at. The vast array of living organisms that live on us and in us, and their only function is to keep us healthy, is just mind-blowing. It's mind-boggling. It's huge. And what happened was because of a reductionist herbalist thought, a reductionist way of looking at it, like your olive leaf extract or your grapefruit seed extract, because it kills stuff in a petri dish, it's going to kill stuff. Profligate use of antibiotic drugs is exactly the same as profligate use of antibiotic herbs. The effect will be the same, and herbalists will be 30 years from now having to morph themselves into something else to be around, because the herbs, the way they use them, will no longer work.
Nope.
Because they're not working to enhance the body's own intrinsic healing ability. They're acting like doctors. They're acting like gods I can kill everything on your body and therefore take away mm-hmm. all the symptoms of disease, and you'll be disease-free. You'll be dead, but you'll be disease-free, and I'll be 100% correct and 100% successful. It's ludicrous.
Just a little bit.
It's absolutely ludicrous. One of the things that strikes me is that I first heard about the use of colloidal silver as an antibiotic years and years and years ago, long before I was interested in natural medicine. Mm-hmm. I remember turning up my nose and saying, oh no, that's stupid. But, you know, way back in my grandparents' day, great-grandparents' day, they talked about how they would take a silver coin and put it in the water barrel on the wagon. Mm-hmm. And it was the agitation and the change of temperature and the barometric pressure and the electrolyte from the electrolytic action of static
mm-hmm.
between the dissimilar metals of the silver and the metal of the barrel, the banding of the mm-hmm. barrel. And actually, you know, the water actually soaks through the wood. And so there's an electrolyte action that would create a colloidal silver that made the water safer to drink.
Mm-hmm.
Because it didn't build up the coliforms and that sort of thing, and it was a positive aid in the treatment or the prevention of cholera mm-hmm. back in the day, in the pioneer days, is to put coins in your water.
Yeah.
So that spawned, that led to the use of colloidal silver. But I remember back in the day when I'm talking 20 years ago, which is really not that long.
Not that long ago. No.
I mean, we're still talking about in the 90s
mm-hmm.
when I learned that as a part of my training as a naturopath, that colloidal silver is a first aid
mm-hmm.
and should not be used as a preventive for infection. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is that your microbes, your common infectious agents, we now know,
mm-hmm.
are very mutable. They're very adaptive, and they become very tolerant, very tolerant of colloidal silver.
Just like a lot of our friendly organisms inside us. Colloidal silver is not necessarily, it doesn't distinguish, is incapable of distinguishing between friendly and unfriendly flora. But eventually, your body does sequester the silver
and
you
learn.
Put into it, studies it, puts it in fat.
Puts it all over.
Puts it all over the place, and you don't die.
From the silver. Well, some people have when they really take a lot of it, the gray guys.
Yeah. But here's the fact. Your pathogenic organisms do the same thing. They study the material and they'll adapt to its presence as well.
They will. And so colloidal silver should be used as a first mm-hmm. aid, because in an acute infection, it's highly effective. Mm-hmm. But for preventing infection, not so much. Why can't natural healers get that sort of thing through their heads? I mean, how many chiropractors are out there prescribing colloidal silver for everything?
I hear about it a lot.
I mean, you know, for high blood pressure, take mm-hmm. this mud pie. Again, it's reductionist.
Hey, your mud sock worked, though.
Mud pies do work. Mud pies are effective. That's why I use that. Here. Take this mud pie. We'll fix your eyes.
It's real.
It's good for what ails you. It's real. It's real. Reductionism is, again, the great... I mean, we come back to this over and over again. It's like we're a broken record. It's like our entire culture is based in reducing mm-hmm. things down to their most convenient denominator. It's not even the common denominator. It's the most convenient denominator. So the remedy is look again at natural systems.
Mm-hmm.
When we train someone in permaculture design, one of the exercises that they have to do is to go out and observe the forest.
Yep.
Is the forest a pond?
Mm-hmm.
Water, standing water, or the forest are the two greatest generators of soil on the planet. So if we want to increase and improve the quality of soil, study the natural systems that are best
building
at making soil. So
right.
if we want to improve and increase the health of the body, study the natural systems of the body. Quit trying to be God. That is what the profession has become. A whole bunch of little squirrely people taking green pills and playing like they're God, that they can step aside, they can sidestep the natural systems of the body and completely ignore the intrinsic healing ability of the body, because obviously the body is failing at that.
Oh, of course.
They're unsuccessful. The body is unsuccessful in its intrinsic built-in systems, so we have to fix it.
Mm.
We're all a bunch of fixers, and you've got to get the fix. Well, we're addicted to that kind of thinking, and that kind of thinking is leading natural medicine, and specifically herbology,
yeah,
right down the consumerist hole, right down the hole. And we need the remedy is to constantly immerse ourselves in an observation of the natural systems, prevent ourselves, avoid, like the plague that it is, the tendency to boil things down to their convenient denominator.
Yeah.
The medicine wheel that we teach absolutely prevents the tendency of modern humans to boil things down to their convenient denominator. It prevents it. It keeps us holistic.
Sometimes our solutions are simple. Sometimes the solutions are so simple that our supplicants struggle with the solutions, but they're seldom convenient.
They're always come.
I have to say, the pattern is, inconvenience is the pattern.
Well,
though simple is sometimes a factor.
Complex systems are sometimes simple.
Right.
simple in their application, but still complex systems. And the definition of complex system is a system with many elements, but not just many elements.
Mm-hmm.
The sustainable complex system, I should say, the complex system is a system, any kind of system,
yeah,
with many elements. But the one that is sustainable is the one where all the elements interact and associate with, mm-hmm, each other. It's the number of associations that's important there. The complexity,
yeah,
of the system, the sustainability of the system. But here we live in a culture that takes complex systems, will you, nil you, and makes them simple, single element systems.
Right.
It's easier to think about infection in terms of killing the infector.
Mm-hmm.
Kill, force the body to do what you want it to do. Forget about its intrinsic healing,
mm-hmm,
ability. Force it. Our culture is about force. The remedy is to back away from force and look at the creative beauty, the exquisite beauty,
mm-hmm,
of sustainable complex systems, and put ourselves back into it as healers. When that, we won't have to morph into anything.
No, we simply have to be.
We will just simply have to be. Now that is mindfulness.
Yeah.
It's not Mick mindfulness. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not supersizing our mindfulness here. That's what mindfulness has become. It was Eric Thompson who taught us,
uh-huh,
Mick mindfulness, because oh my gosh, we are returning to fables.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot endure sound doctrine, as the Bible says, but we heap to ourselves teachers with itching ears, people who will teach us according to our convenience, and we return to fables. The remedy is sustainable systems. The remedy is think of the body again as something that is built with sustainable,
mm-hmm,
intrinsic healing ability. And everything that we do must be geared towards assisting that intrinsic ability. Intrinsic means it's already there.
Yeah.
And we need to stop ignoring it. So in terms of thinking of the lymphatics, it's not what herb to take to,
mm-hmm,
to drain the lymph system. It is look at how the lymphatics are built, how the whole,
uh-huh,
system is built, and work the system very similar to the way the body is built to work the system.
And the question isn't, especially with lymphatics, question isn't what can I use to drain the lymph? The question is what is preventing the lymph from draining?
What can I do to assist the natural,
yes,
system to work naturally again? That is our message tonight. I'm sure glad that you're able to sit through our rantings and our ravings.
We're so good at it. It's fun.
We are actually building up quite an archive of rantings and ravings. Be with us again. You'll get your emails. Sure love having these conversations. This is Chief Cloud Piler and Chief Willimutkin signing off again for Namenha Radio. Walk sacred.
Tanaraw.